from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Fantasy football, fantasy sports were once more casual. Build yourself a fantasy team, hypothetical team, of players plucked from professional rosters. Follow their stats. Have fun with your buddies. See how they do. Today, fantasy sports is huge business. Big investors, big payouts, and this week, a big whiff of scandal. This hour, On Point, big fun, big money, and now big furor in the world of fantasy sports. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you in there addicted to fantasy football, fantasy baseball? How is it changing the sports world? And is it time to regulate, to button it up? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. If you've gone anywhere near sports on TV, you can't miss the commercials. Here's a commercial for DraftKings, one of the biggest companies in this arena, last week.
At DraftKings, we play for glory, for bragging rights, for fantasy football supremacy. But we also play for this, the giant check. The giant check is no myth, no mirage, no fool's gold. It's our trophy, and many hoist it playing our one-week games.
The giant check. James Tran won $1 million in a DraftKings game. Here's his response. Okay, that's excitement. But here was the New York State Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, talking with CBS News this morning yesterday, said unregulated fantasy sports industry is vulnerable to cheating.
There's nothing here to govern how their employees use the data, how they use the data, and the potential for abuse and fraud is tremendous when you have no regulations at all.
With us first today from New York is Noah Davis, journalist, sports writer. His work has appeared in The New Yorker, Sports Illustrated, Vice Sports, and more. His headlines, The Daily Fantasy Sports Takeover, Royal Rumble, Inside DraftKings, Fight to Dominate, Daily Fantasy Sports, and more. Noah Davis, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. How's it going, Tom?
It's going pretty well. Can we just start, and I apologize to the fantasy sports experts out there, aficionados, but for those who don't play, can you just explain very simply how this works?
Sure. I think we need to make a distinction between season-long fantasy sports, which is the traditional fantasy mm-hmm. sports that I think most people are familiar with, where you draft a team at the beginning of the season, and then you pretty much keep that team throughout the entire season. And daily fantasy sports, which is what DraftKings and FanDuel, the two biggest companies in the daily fantasy space, are. So in daily fantasy sports, you draft a team during the baseball season. You draft a team at the beginning of the day. You have a salary cap. Each player has a certain value.
And you can pick players from any professional team. You're putting together, in effect, your own. You're assembling your own roster out of professional athletes.
Exactly, yeah. And you're trying to get the most points. The most you get points for home runs, for hits, for pitchers, for ERA. And then in the NFL, you do the same thing, but you do it for a week. So you pick a quarterback and a wide receiver and a running back mm-hmm. and so on. And you have a certain amount of money that you can spend, a salary cap, say it's $50,000. And so if you have to pick a quarterback, you know, Tom Brady, who's one of the best quarterbacks, he might cost $10,000. And Drew Brees, who's a little bit less of a good quarterback, mm-hmm. he might cost $9,000. And so it's a balance of trying to, you know, with the constraints of the salary cap, trying to mix and match so that you get the most points for the most amount of money.
And then it's tabulated how those players perform in that week. And if the team that you put together comes up with the most points of performance in terms of the touchdown passes and receptions and sacks and all the rest, that's a lot of variables. You've got to be savvy with how you spend your fictional money here. But if you've got the best collection put together when the stats are all tabulated, you're the winner.
Exactly, yeah. And with Daily Fantasy, you can do it head-to-head. So you can play, you and me could play, and we could mm-hmm. put in $5, and the winner would get that money. Or you can play in these big, massive tournaments where, you know, tens of thousands of people will play, and the top 10% get paid out, and the top person gets $1 million.
What are the table stakes for players? It's not literally a bet. It's an entry fee. How's that work?
So you put in an entry fee. So it might be $20 to get into a tournament, or it might be, you know, $5 for a head-to-head between you and me. And then FanDuel or DraftKings will take a percentage, which is usually somewhere between, you know, 10 to 15%, and then you'll get the winnings. So if it's you and I are playing, you know, we'll each put in $5 and the winner will get $9. If we're playing in a tournament and a bunch of people put in a bunch of money, and then the winner will get $1 million. The person who comes in second, third, and fourth will get, you know, $100,000, and so on and so forth.
And for those who aren't following, this is already big money. We're talking billions here in entry fees and money that comes in, billions in money that is going out to fantasy sports players already. A projection that by the year 2020, the annual money flowing through this could be almost $15 billion annually. So we're talking big. Now, let's go to the scandal, if that's the right word for it. Certainly the furor of the week. This was over an employee of one of these companies. You've got DraftKings and FanDuel, the biggest that tabulate all these stats that sort of make the market for this game. One of the employees, Ethan Haskell at DraftKings, did what? He won $350,000 at the end of the day. That's betting on the other through the other company, FanDuel. What's the furor about, Noah?
Yeah, so he's an employee at DraftKings. He won $350,000 on FanDuel. The furor is that he released a list of the percentage of players in the Millionaire Matchmaker game at DraftKings. So he released a list detailing what percentage of players had picked who for the quarterbacks and all of the players. And so the theory is that DraftKings and FanDuel have very similar formats to their contests. And mm-hmm. so if Ethan or any other employee had access to that information, you know, because the way to win daily fantasy sports is to sort of zig when other people are zagging. So mm-hmm. if you know that 80% of the people pick Tom Brady as the quarterback, you probably aren't going to pick Tom Brady because you would pick someone else in case that if that person has an amazing week, you'll win and you'll beat those people.
So he ends up with a $350,000 win. That's pretty big. How much money did he have to put down to win that? Do you know?
I believe it was around $20. It was not very much at all.
Oh, and the release of the statistics that could have influenced his bet, if you want to put it that way, was it just to him? Was it to the entire public? What was his advantage, imagined advantage or potential advantage here?
Well, the advantage is that if you know the information before, because it all becomes public after everyone is locked into their rosters, which means no one can make any changes. If you know the information about the percentages before and you're still able to make changes to your lineup, you can make a change that would be advantageous to you because you would pick a quarterback that other people weren't picking.
But I thought you said it was released, but you don't mean it was released to the general public. He somehow had access when others did not.
Well, he had access, but it was put out before. It was published before the lineups were locked in. So, yeah, it was released, but a lot of people didn't see it because it was, you know, put on a message board.
And all kinds of reaction to that here yesterday. I mean, players didn't like the feeling of it. Fox 25 News yesterday, here's one guy saying he doesn't want to play because he sees insider information being used.
It's all inside information. It's like free money. You're printing money. I probably won't be playing them. Yeah, absolutely.
And here's Mike Bingham of San Jose, California, recently started playing fantasy sports on DraftKings, told NBC News on Tuesday, concerned about fairness.
If the employees of the companies are winning these contests, that needs to be disclosed, because to me that's a conflict of interest.
But here is CEO of DraftKings, Jason Robbins, saying the company doesn't believe the employee did anything wrong.
We have done everything, I think, to investigate this incident and have very clearly found through evidence that we pulled records of when data was sent to this employee that there was absolutely no wrongdoing here.
Noah Davis, standby in New York with us right now from Chicago is Nancy Armour, columnist for USA Today Sports. Her recent column in USA Today is Long Overdue Changes Coming to Daily Fantasy Sports Industry. Nancy Armour, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
The company says nothing was done wrong here. You just heard it right there from the CEO. What's the problem?
Well, of course they're going to say that. The problem is it's perception, number one. If people feel that there is a chance that somebody is gaming the system, why would they bother playing it? So for whether it's DraftKings, FanDuel, or any of the other sites, it's a perception problem, and they need to address that. But the bigger issue is that this just gives fuel for state and federal legislatures who have already had their eye on Daily Fantasy's sports site. Within hours of this coming out, you had a representative, Frank Pallone from New Jersey, saying that he wants congressional hearings. The officials in New York, Massachusetts, and California have all weighed in on this, and there was a class action lawsuit filed yesterday. So whether these daily sites, like it or not, oversight is coming. And that's the best that they can hope for, because states and the feds do have the right to say, you know what, no, this is gambling and we're shutting it down.
Nancy, if this is gambling, a lot of gambling online is already out of bounds. It goes back to legislation half a dozen years ago. Why doesn't it impact fantasy sports?
Well, fantasy sports falls under what are called games of skill, and those were exempted from the 2006 federal legislation. But if you look at it, and they say that it's when you are putting your roster together that you are using your skill to decide that Peyton Manning is going to have a better day than Tom Brady, that you are using your skill to analyze things. But let's be honest. Most of the people who are making the majority of the money or the big money in fantasy games are using algorithms or using computer programs that show them the best percentages. That's no different than what people were doing with online poker. There's splitting hairs between what is skill and what is chance, but there is a lot of chance in these games. I mean, I was at the Dallas Cowboys and New Orleans Saints game on Sunday night. That game came down to a coin flip over who got the ball first in overtime. The Saints did. They scored on their possession and won. So how is that not chance? It is.
If regulation comes, does that mean the end of fantasy sports or just more oversight?
It depends. It could go either way. It could be, you know, the one thing that the fantasy games have going for them is that they have the backing of most of the leagues, or all of the leagues, actually. So that could help them in just getting oversight as opposed to being shut down completely.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about fantasy football, fantasy sports, the betting, the big prizes, the mad fans, and this week, the talk of scandal, the call for more regulation. Noah Davis is with us. He's written for Sports Illustrated, Vice Sports, and a whole lot more on this. Nancy Armour is with us from Chicago with USA Today Sports. She's writing about the call for regulation when it comes to fantasy sports. Ben Mezrich joins us in a moment. He's looked a lot at gambling of many kinds in his big books. You can join us this hour. Do you see scandal in the news this week around fantasy sports? Is it enough to let the fantasy betting companies tighten up their own rules? They say they're doing that. Do we need government regulation? And what about it? Is this a game of chance? Is it a game of skill? Is it good for our sports culture or somehow corrosive? Lots and lots and lots of tsunami of commercials out there encouraging people to come on in, play fantasy sports, maybe win big. Here's one from FanDuel in August.
My third week of playing, I won $15,000 off of a $5 entry.
Oh, I was there when we won the 15 grand and I hit the floor.
There's $5 million on the line in week one's Sunday Million.
I'm 100% going to try the Sunday Million. I didn't try it last year. Shame on me. I'm in this year.
Make this season your FanDuel season.
Go for the big money, but you've got people paying attention now. Tuesday, this is Congressman Frank Pallone, Democrat, New Jersey. He's called for a congressional hearing to look into daily fantasy sports. So the games have grown. They need oversight.
Now it's become full-fledged gaming where you just place a bet, you win, and you know, they are making all this money, the teams as well as the leagues, at the same time that they object to sports betting regulated by the state.
And here's the Attorney General in Massachusetts, where you've got headquarters for these. Maura Healey telling the Boston Globe Wednesday, you've got to have fairness for everyone playing.
Those who play want to be and expect to be assured a level playing field. And I think that particularly as somebody who cares about consumer protections, I think it's really important to make sure that is in place.
Noah Davis, Nancy Armour, before we get to the case of skill or not skill, Noah, would you just remind us of who all is in here? And there are enormous interests behind these now. This is turning into very big business, and I'm looking at just a partial list of investors in these. I mean, you've got Fox Sports, you've got into DraftKings, you've got a three-year deal with the NFL to be a partner in the league's international series in the UK. You've got Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys, Robert Kraft, the New England Patriots, stakes in the draft in DraftKings. In FanDuel, you've got NBC and Comcast and KKR, the huge investment outfit. I mean, you've got big players. That's even before the venture capital guys and all the rest who have sunk a lot of money into these companies.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the keys. And Nancy mentioned it earlier, but if you look at the companies, FanDuel has raised $363 million. DraftKings has raised $426 million. And you're looking at the NBA has a stake in FanDuel, an equity stake. They own part of FanDuel. Major League Baseball, the NHL, Major League Soccer own part of DraftKings, in addition to Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones, as you mentioned. And then there's also Fox Sports, NBC Ventures, Turner Sports. So there's a lot of people with a lot of vested interest in the success of daily fantasy sports. And what the leagues have found is that daily fantasy sports keeps people invested in the sports. You know, you might not watch the ninth inning of a Red Sox game if it's 8-1 and it's a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. But if David Ortiz is coming up to bat and he's on your FanDuel team or your DraftKings lineup and, you know, you need him to hit a home run, you're surely going to stay and watch that game. And the same goes with, you know, there are bad NFL football games all weekend and, you know, that are not entertaining, you know, two bad teams. But if you have a running back from one of those bad teams and you need him to get 80 yards and you're going to win $10,000, you're for sure going to stay and watch that and pay attention.
Nancy, this isn't even necessarily anymore for if you're really obsessed with fantasy sports. It's not about who wins or loses, the teams who win or lose. It's the performance of individual players that may be on your fantasy team.
That's completely correct. And you've also drawn in an element of the population that maybe never even watched football or baseball or basketball before, but because they're in a group with their buddies or because they're they like gambling, that this is another outlet for them.
Is this gambling? Here's sports gaming attorney Daniel Wallach told ESPN on Tuesday, this is a defining moment for the fantasy sports industry.
Can we trust this industry to self-govern and self-regulate? We are undoubtedly headed towards governmental regulation, and it is needed, as in all forms of gambling. This is, make no mistake about it, it is gambling. You're wagering money on an uncertain outcome.
Is it? Is it skill? Is it chance? Will is calling from Boston. Hi, Will. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. My opinion on the whole thing is not that I'm anti-daily fantasy. I'm anti the hypocrisy to hear these companies and the leagues refer to daily fantasy as a game of skill, but betting on a game or handicapping a football game, the Patriots -7, that's a game of skill too. Anybody who considers that a flip of a coin, I mean, there's luck involved in both. There's bad outcomes. You could pick the right side of a game and you could end up losing because of a bad fumble or a bad turnover or a bad referee call. But to call one a game of skill and one a game of luck, anybody who bets on football games or baseball games or hockey games for a living and has a extended rate of success over a long period of time, they're not doing that because of luck. They're doing it because they've got a good skill set. And to differentiate daily fantasy and betting on the games themselves, to me, that's the biggest joke of it all. That's the biggest hypocrisy, because either they should both be legal or they should both be illegal. I'm a big believer that they should both be legal. I think we're adults and we should be able to do what we want, but to differentiate them, that's the crazy thing.
I think Ben Mesrick will agree with you in a moment. He'll be with us. Nancy Armour, remind us, for those who don't follow this closely again, of the difference then. I mean, sports betting in general is like a big no-no. And yet, here's this whole realm where in it kind of comes, but our caller, Will, says this isn't chance, it's a skill.
Well, Tom and I completely agree with Will. That's really, there is skill involved in, as he pointed out, if you're making the big money. But short of picking teams on uniform colors, there is no difference between somebody who looks at, say, the Oakland Raiders' record in Kansas City, Derek Carr's record as a starter, you know, when the sun is out or in a day game versus a night game. You know, there's no difference between that and somebody who is then starting Derek Carr versus, Drew Brees or Alex Smith. It's the same thing.
But one's legal and one's not.
Right. And that loophole, I think, is what the legislators in both the state and the federal level are looking at, saying there shouldn't be this loophole because there really is no difference. And frankly, there's not.
I mean, everybody's kind of in this. Isn't USA Today even somehow invested in fantasy sports, Nancy?
We do have a partnership with RT Sports or on Fantasy Scores. We own the domain name and we co-own a list of names, but all of the IP and the deposits are owned by a group called RT Sports. So it's basically a partnership. But yes, we are involved in it as well.
Noah Davis, you got a lot of big powers lined up for this. Even Congressman Pallone from New Jersey, who we heard, his gripe isn't that it goes on. I think he wants the state to regulate it and take a cut of it rather than just these young private companies.
Yeah, and I don't think that there are many people who would disagree with you. I mean, I think even today the DraftKings founders sent out a letter to all of their players saying basically before this happened we were looking into an independent audit. And, you know, whether or not you believe that is your own thing. But, you know, having talked to them, They did understand that there needed to be some sort of regulation and they needed to do better. I think, you know, daily fantasy sports came out of nowhere. DraftKings was founded in 2012. FanDuel was founded in 2009. But really only last year did it get really, really popular. And so they've just been riding this rocket ship and they haven't had time to, you know, sit back and think about the regulations. And that doesn't excuse it, but it does. You can see how this would happen.
Ben in Omaha, Nebraska. Ben, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Just a little background. I'm pretty heavy into fantasy sports, mainly in yearly leagues. Mm-hmm. I play baseball, football, and NBA.
Okay.
It's through my friends. It's social. It's a good way to keep in touch.
Yeah.
So I see this wave of advertising that you've already discussed come through. Those ads cost money. The money's coming from somewhere. My opinion is that the money is coming from the people that are using these daily fantasy leagues and losing. And I think it's analogous to, you know, going into a casino and you see this nice chandelier. Well, who's paying for that?
Yeah.
People at the slot machines. I think it's 100% gambling.
So what does that say to you? That it should be stopped? That it should go on? That it should go on but be regulated in a different way? What do you think, Ben?
Well, I guess that's kind of up to the states, as gambling has always been. But, I mean, for it to be unregulated, I think is a little dangerous to our populace. I mean, it has a very daily, compulsive, addictive nature to it. I think people can end up losing a lot of money. I mean, we know gambling is a serious problem for certain people. So I think for it to go like it is now just isn't, I mean, it's not going to last.
You may be right, but those commercials are driving millions of people into the games. Here's another from DraftKings in August.
This is it. Week one, best week of the year. And when you play 1 week fantasy football on DraftKings, every week is week one, baby. Every week, use your knowledge and showcase your skills. So what are you waiting for? You like football? You like winning? How about you like them both at the same time and make this week the week you get it done? This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time.
What are you waiting for? Get it done. Noah Davis, Nancy Armour, please stand by. Ben Mezrich joins me right now in the studio, author of, known for his nonfiction books, a number of them about gambling. He wrote Bringing Down the House, this inside story of six MIT students who took Vegas for millions. He wrote The Accidental Billionaires, the founding of Facebook. Of course, that became the social network, the big movie about Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg and all the rest. He's been paying attention to fantasy sports and says, hey, let it rip, at least as I read you. Ben Mezrich, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, yeah.
So everybody looks at what happened, $350K by somebody who's working there, and you've got data that's getting out, and it just looks funky. People say scandal. People say it's time to get in here with a little more regulation. Some people, anyway. You say no, why not?
Well, listen, what I say is that gaming law is completely arbitrary as it is right now. It's hypocritical. The law that was passed in 2006 was snuck in on a port terrorism bill.
This
was,
is the law that shut down internet
this
poker,
is what
for
makes,
example, but carved out
it
space
carved
for
out
fantasy
space for
sport.
Fantasy sports. The reason was is that the leagues wanted fantasy sports. They carved out this area. They said it's a game of skill. But really, we're just drawing lines, you know, randomly. The point that I like to make about this is that fantasy sports is predominantly a game of skill. There's obviously a luck element to it. But just like sports betting, it's a game of skill. Just like poker, it's a game of skill. And there's really no reason why it should be illegal. And, you know, regulation, whether it's self-regulated, industry-regulated, whether the states are doing it, that looks good. And I don't have a problem with it. But my point is this should be allowed.
should be allowed, but what about oversight? What about something?
Well, you know, I don't think the industry is against oversight. The industry has basically said
they'd like to oversee themselves.
Right. We'd like to see. Of course, everyone wants to oversee themselves,
yes,
but
yes.
They just want everyone to play, you know, and if it looks cleaner having a state do it or having the government do it, they wouldn't be against that. They just want it to be allowed. The idea that it should be illegal or not allowed seems ridiculous to me. I look at like Vegas. You know, Vegas in the 50s was ugly and dirty, and then they came in and created a gambling commission. They chased the mob out, and now everyone loves Vegas. And the idea was it's all about the perception. This industry needs the perception of cleanness. It needs the perception of fairness. But beyond that, it should be allowed to exist.
Nancy, if more regulation came in here, you're watching from Chicago. What might that look like?
I think what Ben said, it cleans it up and it takes away the perception that, you know, there's something shady or the potential for something shady. And one thing to consider, too, is Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, has kind of indicated that he might be OK with sports betting, that it could bring more interest to the game. It could raise taxes for whether it's the state or the federal government. So I think if and when they do have the hearings, if and when they take a look at this, I think you'll probably have the leagues coming in and saying, you know what, maybe this isn't such a bad thing.
Noah, is that good for sport? I mean, what was the original rationale for not having legal sports betting? Wasn't it to keep corruption out of professional sports? Is fantasy going to be the thin edge of the wedge that ends up flipping all of our professional sports into the legal gambling arena?
I don't know if it's going to be the lead edge, especially with this latest thing, you know, with this scandal. I think it certainly was going to help. I think what happened this week with DraftKings and FanDuel kind of sets that back a little bit. I personally don't see an issue with sports betting as long as, you know, what's important, like Ben and Nancy have said, is the perception. And, you know, if you're looking at FanDuel and DraftKings, well, you shouldn't have employees of one being able to play on the other site. I think that's something that's pretty simple, and they've already taken steps to make that happen and outlaw that.
The companies are saying that's not going to happen anymore, but everybody was up in arms about it this week. Pat in Clarksville, Tennessee. Pat, you're on. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't have the knowledge to do this fantasy betting and that, but I love football. First of all, I think any time the government decides they want to get involved, that doesn't guarantee no corruption. I do believe that people have the right to do this. They're adults. Go for it. Pete Rose needs to be let off the hook. I mean, we've got horse betting, dog betting, on and on, and, of course, the lottery. So I don't know. I just don't think it's any different. Thank you.
So just let it roll, Pat says, even though she's not a player. Let's go to Peter in Boston. Peter, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Comment is just a few of us are a lot of podcasters who do stuff in this industry. And, you know, I guess the concern is there's a lot of money that Daily Fantasy is throwing around to podcasting and stuff like that. And there's a little concern that if the bubble bursts, it's going to have ramifications, you know, for people that are not trying to do anything semi-illegal with it. We're just trying to, you know, help make this sport more fun.
So you got podcasts and a lot more built around this. You mean commentary and punditry about who's doing what, maybe where to place your bets, what teams to build in a given day or week?
Yeah, exactly. And we're just doing it in a way that, you know, to make it fun and entertaining. And, you know, they're investing a lot of money into, helping draw attention to fantasy sports in general. So
it's working. You know, it's working. I mean, Ben Mezrich, you've watched things go very big. You watched Facebook go very big. This has got that kind of feeling, man. It's big already, and young.
I'm intensely jealous. You know, I sit on the sidelines and watch, and I'm watching an industry being created. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry. It's feeding television with all of these ads and all forms of internet advertising. It's a massive industry, and I think $15 billion a year is a small number. I think it could be much more than that. And, yeah, I feel like this feels like something huge. And if they play their cards right and they stay away from these kind of foolish mistakes and foolish bumps in the road, there's no reason why, you know, we're not watching the next Mark Zuckerberg being created.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about fantasy football, fantasy sports of all stripes, and a whiff of scandal around this big booming world this week. Billions laid down to play, billions paid out in prizes. The whole thing, a very, very new industry, just exploding in scale. All kinds of big players in the sports world lining up behind it and inside it. The leagues themselves, very happy to have this all this going on. It drives all kinds of viewership, and of course that drives streams of revenue like crazy in and of itself. Noah Davis is with us, freelance sports writer. He's written for Vice Sports and a whole lot more, written on this. He joins us from New York. Nancy Armour is with us from USA Today Sports. She's been writing about regulation being pushed now for fantasy sports. Ben Mezrich is here, big best-selling writer. His books, Bringing Down the House, The Accidental Billionaires, his latest is Once Upon a Time in Russia, The Rise of the Oligarchs. Ben Mezrich knows money and sees a lot of it in this realm. You can join us. What do you think? Is this a game of chance, fantasy sports? Is it a game of skill? Is it straight-up gambling? Do you see scandal in the news this week of a DraftKings employee winning $350,000 on FanDuel? Have fantasy sports changed the way you watch real sports? I mean, do you care who wins the game anymore or just how your players play? Here was a co-founder, CEO of FanDuel. This is Nigel Eccles telling CNBC in July that the daily fantasy sports have taken big-time sports excitement and made it come day after day after day, made it a daily thing.
Any day, like any Tuesday or Thursday, can suddenly be a really exciting day because I'm playing in a fantasy basketball league or a fantasy baseball league. And so I think what we've done is really taken the excitement of a season and collapsed it down into one day.
Here's a player, John Bisbano, after the news about the 350K win, talking with Fox 25, saying, hey, okay, but players out there assume that the games are fair.
You're playing against other people that are playing for fun, and you're assuming that you're all operating under the same pretenses.
And here, Attorney General Maura Healey in Massachusetts, where DraftKings is headquartered, telling the Boston Globe on Wednesday, we've got to get in here and make sure things are done right.
We want to make sure that consumers have a level playing field. And obviously, maybe it's because they're a new industry and didn't create the kind of policies and practices that you want to have in place as you grow to make sure that consumers aren't being taken advantage of or aren't duped. For whatever the reason, the point now is let's get it right and let's make sure that we have in place the right policies and practices going forward.
Policy and practices. We're on new terrain here for something that grew out of guys drinking beer. Devin in Nashville, Tennessee. Devin, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. How are you today?
Okay. What do you see, Devin?
Just a couple of things. I've played poker professionally for a good while now, and what some amateurs don't understand is the edge that professionals have takes place over the long term, tens of thousands of hands extrapolated out. So there is gambling in a short sense. In the long term, it's a skill game over the long term. And the second part is that one caller talked about how DraftKings and them are making a killing and they're paying for it with people's losses. What they don't really understand also is that they take an entry fee, right?
Yes.
Dollar for every 10%. The same thing with online casinos. They would take 5% of every pot and extrapolate it over tens of thousands, millions of hands. They make a killing, but they aren't actually stealing any money from people. And I think this regulation, it's a good thing. And secondly, that this scandal isn't going to stop anything. You're going to have 10, 20 more sites popping up in the next couple of years, just like Poker Stars, Party Poker, Bodog, all trying to cash in on the action.
So skill for the high-tier players, chance if you're more casual, and who's really losing, I guess, your point, because the entry fees are not enormous. I appreciate your call, Devin, as a poker player. Ben Mezrich, you know poker and the gambling world very well. Do you see chance here, skill here?
I mean, I definitely see skill here. It's predominantly skill, and he's correct. Over the long term, the skill makes more and more of a difference. But, you know, judging how a player is going to play, it's all about data. You know, you have all the data. You crunch the data. Even if you're using high-level math to do it, that's still a skill-based thing. There is chance, of course, because anything can happen on any given day, right? That's the whole football quote.
That's the line.
Right. But in general and over time, the better players are going to win more than everyone else. That's not to say it's, you know, if you're a you hop on, don't pay attention to any of the data, make a bet and get off that you're going to win because of skill. In that case, you're really playing luck. But the majority, I think, of the winners win over the long term because of skill.
Skill. Nancy Armour, are you going to buy that? If it's skill, does that exempt this from gambling oversight?
Well, Tom, I do think with what Ben said, that over the long term and the big money winners, yes, there is definitely skill involved. But there is some chance. I mean, you don't know if Peyton Manning is going to go out and get his elbow banged in the fourth quarter of a game. I mean, and that's chance. You don't know if it's going to go to overtime and one team is going to get the benefit of a coin flip. That's chance. So it's both. And I think with oversight, it at least gives people the comfort of feeling as if it's a level playing field, feeling as if, okay, I might not have the skill level of somebody who is betting hundreds of games each week, maybe even thousands of games, but I can still win if I do the research and do the work before I put in my entries.
Pete in Augusta, Georgia. Pete, you're listening. You're watching. What do you see?
Tom, thanks for taking my call. My point is it not related or similar to online trading, you know, using a Scottrade or Ameritrade account? Is it not kind of the same philosophy? Yeah, skill takes, you know, makes a difference in it, but there's also some luck in that as well.
So you're paying attention to what a company's got going on, its prospects, its product, but it all depends on bigger things at the same time. Ben Mesrick, just another stock market. Hey, stock market's a casino.
I love this discussion because he's exactly right. I could go and I could empty out my IRA, invest it all in some random penny stock tomorrow, and nobody cares. I can go into the supermarket and buy a scratch ticket, and that's entirely luck, and nobody cares. But when we're talking about this, suddenly we're having this discussion of skill and chance. The reality is we allow lots and lots of forms of gambling, and the stock market for most people is entirely a gamble. Unless you're a professional, unless you're really reading into all the data, that's when it becomes a game of skill, and this is very similar to that.
Noah, scratch tickets, though, I mean, part of the reason that the state signs off on that is that they produce revenue for the state. And, you know, we're told, look, this goes into the kitty and helps pay for all the things we need as social goods in society. Congressman Pallone in New Jersey is saying, okay, sure, let's do fantasy sports, but then let's give the states a cut. Let's not just send all these billions in profit off to private institutions. Gambling is something that the state wants to tap. What about that, Noah?
Yeah, I mean, I think billions is a little dramatic. You know, FanDuel's revenue in 2014 was $57 million, which is a lot of money. But, you know, when you start talking about billions of dollars, that's how much people are betting on the sites. That's not how much FanDuel and DraftKings are making. So I think the money is smaller than people think right now, at least. But yeah, I mean, let's give the states a cut. Let them regulate it. I think we've talked about this before. I don't think anyone would have a problem with that, whether it was FanDuel or DraftKings or anyone in the industry.
Ben, you know some of the people who are involved in this. You know the CEO of DraftKings. Is he, no problem. State going here, take part of our revenue.
His opinion of this is if the government wants to step in and regulate, then they'll do whatever, you know, they have to do. They want to self-regulate right now, but the idea is they're not against at all a regulatory body. They're not against, and they actually are the ones who approached Healey in Massachusetts. They approached all the attorney generals. Mm-hmm. They went to all the different attorney generals and said, here's what's going on. Let's tell us what to do. I think they are kind of begging for regulation because they want it to appear fair. Nobody has a problem with the state, you know, wetting its beak in this, and that's really what's going to go on. Eventually, the government will find a way to get money out of this. I know Jason, and I think that he's smart enough to know that you have to have some level of regulation, whether it's an independent body that they all pay for, or whether it's the state by state or the federal government. There should be regulation, and I don't think they're against that.
Boy, we are the gambling nation. It goes everywhere. Kevin in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Kevin, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. I've actually played on DraftKings and FanDuel a little bit. I'm up about $1,000 in the last year, the profit, not just the winnings.
Okay, good for you. Yeah.
But for me, thanks. But for me, regulation, I figured it was inevitable. That'll happen. But I think one of the most important things is that people come in afraid of, like, the sharks is what they call it. I know that's a gambling term. But people that play this professionally will scoop up a lot of the entries, a lot of the $1 and $2 contests for people that are just starting. And I think that scares away some people.
So one of the most important things for me, if it does get regulated, is that we have maybe an amateur level and a pro level, kind of like you see with poker, like you can go to Vegas and just play, or there's the pro circuit. I think something like that might actually go towards a lot of the regulation.
Interesting. Kevin in Philadelphia talks about sharks and amateurs and pros. I don't quite – how does that work, Ben? I mean, how does a shark scoop up the entry fees or in a – I guess he means essentially by winning.
Right. Well, you know, there are people who have all of this data in front of them. They have computer programs that they can crush all the data. They've been playing a long time. They know what they're doing. Professionals, you know, it's just like professional poker. Mm-hmm. If you sit down at a table and you look across and you see a professional poker player, you know, more than often he's going to be beating you. And yeah, the idea of a shark coming into the area where all these new players are playing who really don't know what they're doing. It seems a little scary.
Maybe two tiers. David in Charleston, South Carolina. You're on the air, David. Hello, David. Are you there in Charleston? Maybe not. Let's go to Matt in New Orleans, Louisiana. Matt, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to the debate about the gambling aspect and the regulation aspect, but I haven't heard a lot of opinions about it's fantasy sports' influence on sports and society. I have friends that play fantasy football. I played 1 year, and I found it to basically kind of undermine whatever good intrinsic values were left in sports that society could find some value, you know, in a player, in a team, in. And I just feel like it's just kind of rewarding individual statistics, and that's really not what team sports are about.
And people sitting around all focused on what money they may make out of the game. I mean, of course, that beautiful Beau ideal is of spirit and grace and even nobility out on the field. No, Davis, what about it? Undermining something important about sport itself, even in the realm of professional sports where money is such a big deal already. Our New Orleans caller says, look, this threatens to strip away whatever's left of the sort of higher aspirations of sport.
I can see that argument. I would say, I mean, personally, I don't see it that way. I am a New England Patriots fan, so I like watching the Patriots. I also, you know, have a season-long fantasy baseball team, and so I root for individual players. You know, as a Red Sox fan, sometimes it's hard to root for a Yankee pitcher, but if that Yankee mm-hmm. pitcher is on my team, then I root for him to have a good day. So, you know, I think it can strip away a little bit, but I also see the benefits in just sort of increasing interest in sports in general.
Nancy, what about a more gritty kind of corruption coming in here? Is there room, sort of shoeless Joe Jackson style, for some player on the field to know that there's a huge bet riding on his or some sport her performance and in some small way barely perceptible in the overall game, but throwing, you know, dropping a pass and boom, somebody makes a million?
There's always the potential for that, but I think it's harder simply because you're not betting on an entire team, one group. You're betting on a combination of players. So just because, you know, say mm-hmm. a receiver drops a pass, that's not necessarily going to guarantee that, you know, that it's going to affect the outcome. There are too many other moving parts. But one thing that is interesting, and I think this could be a benefit if there is some regulation, is betting is legal in Europe. And what they have done is the leagues themselves have gone to security systems that can monitor the betting and can point out, hey, you need to take a look at this game or you need to take a look at this player or this team. We're seeing a lot of action on X, Y, or Z. And that could be a benefit of regulation here is that you would have safeguards like that in place that could keep an eye out on potential corruption or you know, nefarious actions.
I'm not sure that's what I want to be worrying about, but maybe we'll have to. John in Ithaca, New York. John, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. My call is actually a little bit similar to the callers from New Orleans. I quit watching or playing fantasy baseball a long time ago. I was the founder and president of a fantasy league in Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that after a couple of 3 years, I wasn't watching baseball anymore. And that's my favorite game. I wasn't watching it. I was seeing strikeouts. I was seeing at-bats. I was seeing stolen bases. I was seeing whip.
You were just watching the stats, not the game.
Exactly. So I felt like kind of like, you know, people sometimes complain about physicians. They say, well, they don't see a patient. They just see a collection of parts. And that's what baseball had become. And I quit fantasy so that I could watch baseball again.
Ben, what about it? Robbing the joy for John, and he was big in this.
Yeah, you know, I think that's it's a really interesting point, and it's a great point. I think it's also interesting to see that the leagues themselves kind of want you to play fantasy sports because they're all investing in it. But there is that kind of, you know, I guess you have to compartmentalize. You have to be able to enjoy the game and enjoy the teams, while at the same time, if you want to sort of be betting on the individuals in the game, you're sort of enjoying them reaching these incredible stats day to day. But I see your point, and I think it's an interesting one. But really, you know, sports has always been driven by this. I mean, in the newspaper, they print the brackets in March Madness. Super Bowl, everyone's got that corner where you make a bet on a little square. Sports and gambling have gone together since the very beginning. I think, you know, some people can look at it and still see the game as a game, and some people look at it and are seeing all the moving parts. I think it's just a different way of looking at it.
Nancy, where do you think this goes? Bigger and bigger? More Americans in on fantasy sports? Bigger money? More oversight? Is that the direction here?
I don't think it's going away. I think there's been too much money. It's become too ubiquitous for it to just stop. But I do think we are going to see oversight, and I think it will take the form either of a commission, like Ben said, that there is in Las Vegas, or something more along a federal regulation similar to what they've done with the stock market. But either way, I think there is regulation coming.
Noah, more and more? Is that where we're headed?
I think we are. I think there's too much money. There's too many vested interests with baseball and hockey and all kinds of different leagues that want it and all the networks and everything. I think it's just going to get bigger and bigger.
Ladies and gentlemen, the powers that be lined up. Perfect your rosters. Cross your fingers. Ben, of all the kinds of gambling out there, with all the skill, there's also gambling here. Joy in this one more than others?
You know, I think it's fun. For me personally, I think it's exciting. You know, I think this train is going. No amount of pitchforks gathered around are going to stop this train. It's going to keep going, get bigger, and hopefully be very clean and fun.
Wow. There it is. Little skill, a lot of chance, rules the world. Ben Mezrich, author of Bringing Down the House and The Accidental Billionaires. His latest is Once Upon a Time in Russia, The Rise of the Oligarchs. Ben, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Noah Davis in New York, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Nancy Armour with USA Today Sports. Thanks, Nancy, in Chicago.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
This is On Point.